Today's opening tip, Luke Walton slammed his clipboard last night out of frustration. Walton, of course, is a Steve Kerr coaching disciple. So, Richard, what's up with all you Arizona guys in the clipboards?
Look, I know Arizona was a fun school. It was a party school. But guys got some tempers. Guys get fired up. Steve Kerr's the same guy that got in a fight with Michael Jordan, the most competitive athlete maybe of our entire time. Look, Luke Walton learned some things from him. He can't be the maddest person on the court. That's got to be his players.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, when you have the worst defense historically in NBA history,
well,
a lot of blame to go around.
But wait, that's a bit skewed because like seven of the greatest offenses of all time are also this year. So there's got to be a flip side
to
that.
I said there's blame to go around. Okay, I was agreeing with you. Relax there, Arizona guy.
All right,
welcome to the Jump. I'm George Sedano, sitting in for our fearless leader Rachel Nichols today. And, of course, she's on assignment. I'm joined by a couple of NBA champs. You've heard one of them in Richard Jefferson. Of course, our man, Kendrick Perkins. Coming up later, Rachel sat down with Steve Nash ahead of the Nets ABC Saturday primetime matchup with the Mavericks. They talked about the Nets defense, the addition of James Harden, and much more. So stay tuned for that. But first, let's get to the Sixers, who remained ahead of the Nets by a half game in the top spot in the Eastern Conference after beating the Mavericks yesterday. Philly held Luka Doncic to 19 points, with Ben Simmons serving as the primary defender. Here's what Simmons said after the game.
My IQ, I feel like it's very high. I try to make the right plays every time down the court. It's a mismatch nearly every time when I step on the floor. So, you know, I'm trying to make my teammates better. I'm trying to be the best point guard I can be and lead this team the right way. And then defensively, I feel like that's just effort. I do feel like I'm the best defensive player in the league. I can guard 1 through 5.
Simmons definitely put the clamps on Luka last night, and here are some of the numbers to prove it. Luka shot 33% when guarded by Simmons, compared to 57% from the field when guarded by anyone else, really. So, Richard, Simmons says he's the best defender in the league. You buying that?
Well, look, I believe that he believes that 100%. And this is one thing that he said. Name another player that typically can guard 1 through 5. Maybe like Draymond Green, and because you got to understand there's a size difference with Ben Simmons, but also Draymond Green, Kawhi, there's probably about 5 or 6 guys that can fiver in the league what he does. And look, if he believes he's the best, I'm not going to argue with him.
No, he is the best, and he should be the front runner for Defensive Player of the Year. When you look at Ben Simmons at 6'10", 250 pounds, physical specimen, he's fast, he knows how to use angles, he's great at shooting passing lane. Last night, he was on Luka heels like a pair of socks, picking him up at the half-court bar, fighting to get up over screens. He can't switch 1 through 5, and look, he, in my eyes right now, he is the best defensive player in the league, and he's the front runner for Defensive Player of the Year. I don't know why RJ is making that face, but this is all facts.
I'm making the face because you said on his heels like a pair of socks. That was funny.
I mean, that's a good analogy.
That was a great analogy. I've heard a lot of country lingo in my day. That one was a good one.
Well, listen, our guy Hembo at ESPN Research tweeted this out today. Luka Doncic, when guarded by Ben Simmons, according to Second Spectrum, 47 half-court matchups, 10 points, 3 assists, 4 turnovers. That's pretty good stuff, man, Richard. I don't think there's any question about that.
No, there is no question. Look, I wasn't trying to make any arguments against Ben Simmons here in this point, but there's also guys that are very different, that have a different skill set, like a Rudy Gobert that have won it, like a Draymond Green. They're not built the same, but currently right now with where Philly stands and how he has played this year, I agree with Perk. He should be a front runner for Defensive Player of the Year.
Perk, let me jump in here. So who are the guys that you think can guard 1 through 5? Obviously, Ben is one of them. Draymond is another one. Kawhi, you mentioned, I think it's certainly possible. Yeah. LeBron at times has done that, certainly throughout his career. Bam Adebayo, maybe another guy that can do that stuff. There's not a lot of guys, Perk.
I mean, you have Anthony Davis and maybe Giannis.
Yeah.
But when I look at Ben, the difference between Ben and everyone else at that size is his ability to fight and get over screens. Like when he was guarding Luka last night, it wasn't like he was switching pick and rolls. He was fighting to get up over screens, and you don't really see that out of a guy that's 6'10", 250 pounds. And the great thing about Ben, if he do get beat off the dribble, he is great at chase down blocks in the half court set. So That's why I give the edge to Ben Simmons right now. And he look, he's taking pride in doing it.
Yeah.
This is not the first time that I've seen him do this. He's been doing this all season long.
Yeah, that's why he's an all-star, and that's why he's one of the better players in the league. All right, let's move on. Nuggets Wizards last night. Denver was down 2 with 10 seconds to go. They had numbers on the fast break, but everyone decided to run to one side and all of them to the three-point line. Needless to say, not great spacing there. Denver failed to score and lost the game. So here's what Nuggets head coach Michael Malone and Jamal Murray said after the game.
We had a layup. You know, it's a 3-on-1 break. You know, all Michael Porter's got to do is cut to the basket. All Jamal Murray's got to do is push the ball and attack. But we didn't get that. We got a Faku 3, and obviously it didn't go in.
4-on-1, somebody should go to the rim. I thought Mike was going to the rim. He stopped for 3. He might have thought I was shooting it, and I should have shot it. I gave Faku a bad pass. I think if I'm going to stop at the 3, I got to shoot it. And if Mike's running the lane, he got to go to the rim, especially when there's other guys behind him. So I guess it's just a tough play where we didn't know what we were doing. We just got to score.
Jamal Murray's tweet after the game speaks for itself. Clearly not great spacing, not a great situation, as he alluded to. So, Perk, I got a couple of questions for you. Are you retweeting or deleting this from Murray? Do you like this particular approach from him, okay, putting it on social media? And what do you think of the late-game execution by the Nuggets?
Well, first of all, I'm deleting it. I would have never tweeted it. You cannot throw your teammates under the bus. That's the first thing. And you're a leader. They're paying you $30 million a year. You're the Robin of the team. These are young guys. The guys that he put on this on his tweet at that angle was a second Michael Porter Jr., who's a young player in his second year. A guy that was an undrafted rookie. Like, you got to lead by example, and that's not the way to do it. Secondly, I see why RJ didn't work out in Denver, because if they developing these type of habits and not having winning plays, knowing RJ being a champion, he would have slashed to the basket. Is this what they're teaching over there? Oh. Yes, it is, because I blame the analysts, right? Because for the simple fact, teams are rehearsing this day in and day out in training camp and in practices. Hey, when you get out, run to the three-point line. It looked like they was allergic to running into the paint, and it's a shame.
But, okay, so one, that's not the reason why I didn't work out in Denver. I was 200 years old when I was in Denver. This is what I will say about this.
I was giving you a compliment.
I appreciate it, Perk. But look, he needs to delete this. You know why? Because Jamal Murray, the first 30 games of the season, really struggled. He really struggled. So to all of a sudden start throwing blame, and look, I don't think he was throwing blame when he first said it. They both said Michael Porter. Coach said it, and then Jamal Murray said Michael Porter. There's three people there, and you only heard Michael Porter's name. Now, look, Monte Morris could have drove. Like, multiple people could have done different things. And my biggest thing about this is, like, yes, you teach players to run to the corner, young players, but ultimately Jamal Murray is one of the best young players in this league. He is one of the best guards in this league. If it wasn't for his slow start, he'd have an opportunity to be an all-star this year. So I love Jamal Murray's game, but part of that becomes mistakes and growth. Here to call them out on, not him out, but just to play on Twitter and to say, oh, that's crazy. Well, look, there's other layers to that. It's a young player. Jamal, you really struggled the first 30 games of the season. I don't see any of your teammates throwing out tweets like, God, I can't believe he missed this shot. Or, man, we need Jamal Murray to play better. Like, these are things that you want to keep in house. Everyone's frustrated. I think that was emotional. Jamal Murray will be better. But ultimately, when you look at that, that a lot has to do with the entire group. There were three people over there that should have gone in for a layup, that had an opportunity for a layup, and, you know, you just got to take it. But Jamal Murray's got to be better. Like, it's disappointing, because I know that he is a great leader. I know that he is a great young player. And this, I think that tweet was just emotions.
So, Richard, let me ask you this, because you mentioned growth a lot there, and you mentioned how much you like Jamal Murray, and we all like Jamal Murray. What we saw in the bubble from him was incredible. But doesn't the growth part also apply to his leadership abilities and styles, right? Like, this is the first time over the last year or so where it's really been his team as the vocal leader, right? Like, Jokic is the best player, but he is the vocal leader here.
Yeah, but you don't have to be a vocal leader via Twitter, right? Like, that's not how you're a vocal leader. That's not it. Because ultimately, these things can cause little bitty tensions. Because what happens the next time you make a mistake and Michael Porter Jr. runs to Twitter and points out something? Then all of a sudden, it looks like, oh, well, you can't be talking to your star like that. Oh, you shouldn't do it. You got to set a precedence of like, hey, this morning, I wasn't even a big fan of just saying, oh, well, Michael Porter Jr. should have gone. There were three people over there. Name all three, because all three people are guilty for not running in for a layup. Anybody could have gone and got that layup. So to single out now, Michael Porter Jr. was the first one. That's why he was in the deep corner. So I kind of see your point, but ultimately there were multiple players there that could have gone and got the layup. So to call it out, to do these things, it doesn't help.
Well, I strongly believe it's in desperate need that they need some virtual learning over there on how to be leaders all across the board. Because I'm going to say this, just a couple weeks ago, Mike Malone, in a post-game interview, he said, hey, Jokic is balling. I need other guys to step up and give him some help. I thought he should have kept that in-house. That's something that you talk about behind closed doors. Usually, if you're a coach, you come out and say, hey, our team just has to play better overall. You don't pinpoint and say, hey, one person is doing his job and others are not, because you can pinpoint certain areas where Jokic is not as good on defense, where he's getting blown by on pick and roll coverages. So at the end of the day, I think they need a coming to Jesus meeting all across the board, including Mike Malone.
All right, so growth across the board, perhaps, for everyone there in Denver, a learning experience. We'll see. All right. Coming up, Zion was asked about participating in the dunk contest on First Take this morning with Stephen A., Max, and Molly, but he was non-committal. How badly do you want to see this happen? We'll get to that. Zion Williamson was on First Take this morning, and of course, the topic of next month's dunk contest came up. Let's check it out.
What's the deal? Are we going to see you in the dunk contest?
I don't know yet. I don't know yet.
Come on, Zion. You're on First Take. This is the time to announce it to America with Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman. We're going to see you, right?
Who knows? Who knows? Still thinking about it.
So you're saying there's a chance. All right, Richard, I'll start with you. How badly do you want to see Zion in the dunk contest?
I think randomly that Zion needs this dunk contest. I think when you look at what dunk contests do for athletes, whether it was Vince Carter, Michael Jordan, just going back in history, the dunk contest is a platform for everyone to see what you're capable of doing, your creativity. Now, everybody grew up watching Zion, watching him on YouTube, but this is your moment. This is everyone has dunk contests, but there's only one NBA dunk contest. And so to be a part of that group, that would be something special. And I think he's got all of the tools.
All right, Perk. So according to The Athletic, Obi Toppin, the high-flying Knicks rookie from Dayton, is expected to participate in the dunk contest. So, Perk, if Zion enters, this could be something special here, right? And special.
Oh, it will be something special. Look, this kid is so athletic, it's ridiculous. Every time I see him dunk or elevate, I get jealous instantly and ask God, why didn't he give me this type of athleticism? He's a high flyer. And you know what? I'm all in for it, because big man entering into the dunk contest, they already going to be behind the eight ball. And so Obi Toppin is just going to shock the world.
Yep. I'm with you. I want to see it. Give me Zion. Give me Obi Toppin. Give me all these young men, right? To Richard's point earlier and Perk, your point, this is a stage that you get if you're these guys.
If Zion doesn't do it, he's afraid. Oh. I'm going to call it out. If he doesn't do it,
you wouldn't
afraid.
Say. Hold on, Rich. Hold on, RJ.
I'm taking Toppin over him anyway, so it don't matter.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is you can't do that because you wouldn't dare call LeBron afraid. He never entered the slam.
Go ahead, RJ. Say it.
Who?
Say it.
LeBron was 100% afraid. He was 100% afraid. LeBron didn't want that. He didn't want that. He didn't have that sexiness. LeBron didn't have all that.
LeBron,
he's a game dunker.
LeBron, you were called out by your former teammate Richard Jefferson. That's all I'm going to say. All right.
It's too late. He's 70 years old now.
Coming up next on The Jump, Steve Nash has the Brooklyn Nets red hot and rolling. 8 straight wins. Is the first year head coach silencing some of his critics? Kendrick Perkins. We break it down next with Rachel Sit Down with Welcome back to The Jump. Steve Nash is just 34 games into his head coaching career. While the Nets battled defensive struggles early in the season, they're now hitting their stride, riding that 8-game win streak that I mentioned. And as they head into the matchup with the Mavs. Tomorrow night, our girl, Rachel Nichols, sat down with Nash to talk about the adjustments he's already made in his young coaching career. Let's take a look.
Durant, good night!
Kyrie hasn't played since January 5th because of personal reasons.
The deal sending James Harden to the Nets is now official and officially changes the calculus in the NBA.
Well, this has been a nice, quiet first few months on the job. How would you describe your experience as a head coach so far, especially of these Brooklyn Nets?
It's been great. We've definitely had a lot thrown at us. You know, it feels like we've had a couple years worth of kind of turbulence in some ways, but I've loved it. I look at it as a positive and embraced all of it and feel like it'll, in the end, help us and help me facilitate this group's best effort.
You guys as a team had a real gut check moment just a couple weeks ago. You had a very bad loss to Detroit. The defense was bad. The effort was bad. You were seen on the sidelines in a very animated discussion with DeAndre Jordan. What did that turn into for you guys? How was that a turning point?
You know, it gave us you know, evidence that things needed to change. And so we, you know, we showed film, we talked about it, and we challenged them. We challenged them to bring more emotion and energy and competitive fire. And since then, you know, we've been playing good basketball. And for me, I think what's been most exciting is I feel like the group's starting to come together a little bit, you know, as people as much as anything.
How good defensively do you think you guys have to be if you're going to win a title this year, considering all the great offensive talent that you already have?
We have to be better, for sure. Somewhere between solid and very good. That's a project that, you know, everyone realizes it could make or break our season. So that is something that we are cognizant of, that we talk about every single day, and that we are moving in the right direction. But it's going to take the entire year for us to figure out how good we can be defensively.
James Harden with a big three-pointer.
Triple-double in his Nets debut. Welcome to Brooklyn.
James Harden gets traded to Brooklyn. Could have gone a lot of different ways, Steve, but he came in really determined to be a facilitator. How has that unfolded from your perspective?
It's been amazing. He's, in a sense, exactly what we needed. You know, he's a guy that is so gifted at reading the defense, manipulating the defense, distorting the defense, creating opportunities for his teammates. You know, a really true playmaker at a historic level.
How much do you get the sense that your current players know about your playing career? They obviously know you're a Hall of Famer, but how much of a sense do you have that they actually watched you play or know about some of the details of your playing career?
Well, I mean, that's funny because some of them I played against, you know. Kevin, Jeff Green, DeAndre, you know, go down the line. The rest of them, I don't know. I don't know if they know anything about. I've never discussed it with them. I don't even know if they know what teams I play for.
When I think back to your career and moments I've covered, one of my favorite memories isn't as much a finesse moment, but the Western Semis in 2010. You got that bloody gash on your eye. What do you remember from that?
You know, I took an elbow and it was bleeding, and I thought, okay, let's go get this stitched up and come back out. I did not know that by the time I got out, it'd be swollen shut. I don't know if you've ever done this, but gone to a park and shot with one eye closed, you start, depth perception is a little off. So fortunately, I threw up a three, it went in and hung in there, and my teammates were great, and we won.
Nash takes it off the dribble, wrap around to Stoudemire.
Mesmerizing force of a handle.
Nash, behind the back. Trademark move.
NBA MVP, Steve Nash.
When we look back on your career, the MVPs, of course, stick out. There's so much conversation around who should be an MVP. What should we give the award for? Is it for the best player in the league overall? Is it for who happened to have the best statistical season that year? How does your experience and some of the backlash against you when you won it over Kobe Bryant inform how you feel about it for today?
That's a good question. You know, it's not really, I don't know that I have an opinion. You know, I think that, you know, it's a moment in time. And I think when we look back, we forget what that moment was and we just look at the names. And so you look back and you think, well, why hasn't LeBron won it every year? But in each individual year, we had some of the incredible seasons that, you know, that guys like Steph Curry or Kevin Durant, you know, were in that moment off the charts and it was their time. So I just, you know, look back at my career and I find a lot of reward that I put myself into that category and that conversation, being a kid that, Came from the west coast of Canada, had one scholarship offer and nobody wanted, and scrapped and clawed and found my way to play 18 years in the league and have some success.
There's no one who's a real comp to you in the NBA. There's no present day Steve Nash, but we've heard Mark Cuban compare his young star Luka Doncic to you a few times, partly on the court, but also just in terms of position. He said letting you go was the biggest mistake he ever made. He's not going to make that mistake with Luka. As you prepare to face the Mavericks here on ABC Saturday night, what do you think of all of those comparisons?
Well, it's a compliment for me. I mean, these guys today are unbelievable basketball players. I mean, Luka can do all the things I could do, and he's 6'8", 235 pounds. So, you know, I'm barely 6'2", and 178 pounds. I think it's going to be a great game. You know, they're a team that hasn't reached their heights yet. And if we want to beat them, we're going to have to play near our best.
All right, thanks to Steve and Rachel for that. This just in, according to the Nets, Kevin Durant will sit out through the All-Star break with that hamstring injury. So, Richard, you cover this team. How do you feel about this?
I think it's easily the right move for a number of reasons. One, the team is playing well, right? Not that you're concerned about where you are in the standings or this, but the team is playing well. Kevin Durant obviously coming off an Achilles injury. If he has anything lingering, it's just like, dude, sit out for 2 weeks. Your goals are to win a championship. You need to be 100% healthy. So the team's playing well. Take the break. You'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm with RJ on this one, George, finally, right? I mean, who needs Kevin Durant? The chemistry is great without him. Why come back and mess up the chemistry? But nah, seriously, Kevin Durant, it's about the marathon and it's not about the sprint. It's about the marathon. And I think he should take his time coming back, you know, like Richard said, coming off the Achilles injury. Because one thing about KD, he could fit in. He's going to fit in regardless. He's a guy that could play off the ball, efficient score. You can move him around multiple positions. So I'm not worried about him coming back in and fitting in with this team. So I think it's the right decision.
So, Perk, you started to allude to some of that, but give us some reasons as to why he would fit in so seamless, and it's probably more important for Kyrie and Harden to get on the same page.
Well, I mean, because it's just who he is. When you look at him and you watch him in Golden State, I always was wondering, how was he going to fit in with Clay and Steph? And he did just that, averaging about, 25, 26 points a night on 18 shots. That's how good he is. Like, Kevin Durant is just an unselfish guy that's all about team, that can just come in and fit in whatever. He's just a flat-out hooper, though, George. You could drop him off anywhere in America.
Richard, you can drop him off anywhere in America except where Perk is right now. No, there's Perk. Anywhere, he's back.
No, we're done listening to Perk. Listen. Kevin Durant is just such an anomaly. It's like you look at Chris Paul. Wherever Chris Paul goes, he has this positive impact on different teams. LeBron James, second year, you know, in Cleveland wins a championship. Second year in Miami wins a championship. There are certain players that just understand the game of basketball and how it should be played, and Kevin Durant is one of those guys. He knows who he is. He knows his role. He knows what he does best, and he does it extremely well. So get him 100% healthy. We've seen too many double surgeries. You saw it with John Wall. You saw it with DeMarcus Cousins, a torn Achilles, a torn ACL. You saw it with Klay Thompson, a torn Achilles, a torn ACL. So sit him down till he's 100% healthy.
George, RJ just said the same thing I said. The only difference was I said it in Beaumont, Texas style, and he said it from a graduate from Arizona. That's all.
I'm with you.
He just wanted to give it out there the collegiate way. But I gave it to you real and 100.
I'm with you, Perk. You are 100. Richard, you're like, 97 sometimes.
Whatever. That's fine.
Yeah. All right. So let me ask you this. Woj is just reporting that Domantas Sabonis will be the replacement for Kevin Durant. So, Perk, let me ask you. We'll start with you. He's a big man, gets in the game. How do you feel about Sabonis in the game?
I love it. Look, I thought he should have been in the All-Star game anyway over Vucevic, but that's neither here nor there. I love that Sabonis is the replacement. This guy is averaging 21 points, almost 12 rebounds, and 5 assists. And to me, he reminds me of a baby Jokic. He brings the same thing to the Pacers that Jokic brings to the Denver Nuggets. The offense is ran through him. He's skilled, one of the best passing bigs in the game today. And I love that he got his just due by being a replacement and going down to All-Star in Atlanta.
You know what I don't know? Who replacements in the All-Star game were 5 years ago. So it doesn't matter that you're a replacement. You are an All-Star, Sabonis. That is all that matters. Congratulations. You deserve it. And I'm happy for you and your team, man. Congratulations.
I love that Perk was about to disagree with you there and then realized that you were actually saying the right thing there. All right. Coming up next, Dennis Schroeder is listed as probable for the Lakers game tonight after missing 4 games due to COVID protocols. What difference does his looming return make for the world champion Lakers? Stick around for that here on The Jump. Let's transition to the defending champion Lakers. Dennis Schroeder is listed as probable for tonight's game against the Blazers. He's missed the last 4 games after being placed in the NBA's COVID-19 health and safety protocols. Lakers lost all 4 games they didn't play. So, Perk, what changes with Schroeder back in the lineup for the Lakers?
Oh, everything changes. Let me tell you something, George. The Lakers need Dennis Schroeder like old people need soft shoes with orthotics in it, okay? We already know what he provides on the offensive end. Another facilitator, a guy that can create for others and can create for himself. But when on the defensive side of things, have you noticed since Dennis Schroeder has been out that the Lakers defense has taken a step back? Because he brings the tenacity to that team. He plays an old school game. He's a pest. He's still one of the few guys that picks up 94 feet. And when you're on that back line, especially a guy like myself that was a center, when you used to see your point guard picking up full court and pressing guys, that brought the energy into you and made you want to get into guys and put life into you on the defensive end. So the Lakers getting Dennis Schroeder back is everything. RJ, you can fix your face like you want, but you know I'm preaching the gospel right now, and it's just real, okay?
Go ahead.
Okay, so look, Perk is 100% right. Look, when both him and Anthony Davis went out, you lost the front line of your defense, a guy that, like Perk said, picks up 94 feet. And he's not like this shutdown stopper, but he puts pressure on teams from the beginning. From the minute you inbound the ball, he puts the pressure on you. And then you lose the guy that's the back line of your defense, blocking shots. The Lakers were a top 3 defensive team, and then these two guys went out. And low-key, their defense and their offense kind of went to shambles because both of these guys are great. Or Anthony Davis. Davis is great. Schroeder is a very good offensive player. So he is very important to the success of this team. At least the front line of your defense will be back and these guys can be aggressive. So having him back, all the problems aren't fixed because the Lakers had some glaring problems over this stretch, but it is a step in the right direction.
All right, I can't add any more to that, but I'm with Perk. Old people do need soft shoes, RJ. What are you shaking your head about? Come on now. All right.
Because he's going to keep coming up with random analogies and I'm just going to keep rolling my eyes.
All right.
I'm just mad because you can't come up with
it. Exactly. You got it, Perk. There you go. You nailed it now. All right, welcome back. We're almost out of time here for the week. But before we go, let's hit the Celtics, who have lost 3 straight and find themselves tied for 9th in the Eastern Conference at the moment. Perk, you've been critical of your former team. Who do you feel is most to blame for what's going on in Boston right now?
Well, it's Brad Stevens because his lack of accountability. The Celtics have been inconsistent on the offensive end and the defensive end. And when you start to see your role players do things out of body on the offensive end, like Tristan Thompson, who's my brother, I love to death, but catching it at the free throw line and trying to go between his legs and do hesitations to take guys off the dribble, that means that he's not being held accountable and being a star in his role. Watching Daniel Tice walking the 3-point shots early in the shot clock is just not going to get it. Watching Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown not put forth the effort defensively and fight like the rest of their teammates, that means that they got to say so and that they're not hearing or not being told what to do or how to do it. So it's on Brad Stevens.
Perk, not being told that I feel like that's a little bit of a stretch there. Ultimately, the Boston Celtics, they need to figure this out. I think they will. That's part of the growth for these two young stars that they have, these two young all-stars. Like, they need to look at within themselves. They need to look at their teammates. And there needs to be a higher level of accountability, not just from the coaching staff on down. Because, Perk, you know, coaching staff on down, that's to a level. It's amongst yourselves as players. You are now, you have 2 all-stars. You are no longer young in this league. You got your extensions. You got all the points and and everything. So raise your accountability. How much are you willing to challenge your teammates if you're those two stars?
Well, let me jump in real quick because I disagree with both of you. I think it's Danny Ainge who said that this roster is not good enough, and it's on him. Okay, listen, it's not on Brad Stevens that Kemba's knee is not great and that he hasn't played well. It's also not on Brad Stevens that this team has not been deep. Even last year when they got to the conference finals, that was a criticism.
Wait, really quick. Remember when Michael Jordan said at his Hall of Fame speech, players win championships? He never saw a franchise or organization out there with a sprained ankle or playing with the flu. The two players, the two stars, need to come together, and they need to hold more of their teammates accountable, including themselves.
But RJ, let me tell you something. Just like you work and cover the Brooklyn Nets, I work and cover the Boston Celtics. I watch every single game, and I'm telling you what my two eyes see on a night-to-night basis. They are not being held accountable. They do whatever the hell they want to do when they want to do it. So when I'm telling you something and it's virtual learning right now, you need to listen.
All right, at the buzzer here, Tim Bontemps tweets, the Raptors say six members of the coaching staff, including head coach Nick Nurse, will not be on the bench due to COVID protocols and NBA health and safety guidelines. Perk, Kyle Lowry going to have to hold the clipboard tonight or what?
Look, he can finally get his chance to audition so when he retire, they can see what he made of.
Call your own fouls, too. Players can coach themselves, call their own fouls, play shirts and skins. Do whatever you want out there.
Thanks to Richard. Thanks to Perk. I'm George. The Jump returns on Monday with Rachel. See you.